Hi, everybody. Before we get into the program today, let me explain to you why you should become a subscriber at subscribestar.com/wrongthinkradio. We want to be funded directly by our audience. We don't want to have to worry about whether or not the information we bring you sells more pillows, dick pills, or gold. We want to have the voice of the people behind our program. So stop listening to programs that tell you how to think and start listening to a program that tells the world what you think. That's subscribestar.com/wrongthinkradio. It's only $2.99 a month to help support independent media.
You're about to enter the intersection of common sense and facts, where media bias ends and truth begins. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Wrong Think Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Wrong Think Radio. I'm your host, Aaron Bierlein, broadcasting from just outside the nation's capital in beautiful Northern Virginia. And welcome to the intersection of common sense and facts. Now, here's the news of the day for 5 August 2020. And man, it's a hell of a newsworthy day. We actually have a lot of clips today, a lot of stuff that's going on. And I think all of it is going to touch on different things that have kind of been happening. But the main story really of today was the fact that Sally Yates gave testimony in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee chaired by Lindsey Graham. So Lindsey Graham's finally doing something, everybody. That's kind of exciting. Now, what's going to come out of it? I don't know. I want to like Lindsey Graham sometimes, but he's been slow rolling this investigation a lot, and there's been a lot of promises. But there's good news that comes out of this testimony, and I'm not seeing it really covered in a lot of different conservative media outlets. I think they're sort of missing the boat on this because there is some very interesting stuff. So I have a few clips here, but there's a common theme that I'll go through at the end of all of the clips. But there's also just some comments I want to make during some of the clips here. And so let's just dive right into it. This is one of the first clips that came out, one of the most popular ones, that came out of Sally Yates' testimony today in front of the Senate.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Yates, when did you first become aware that the Obama administration was surveilling the Donald Trump campaign?
The Obama administration was not surveilling the Donald Trump campaign.
So a FISA application is not surveillance?
The FISA application was for Carter Page, who was a former member of the Trump campaign at that point.
So your testimony is that the investigation in Carter Page had nothing to do with the Donald Trump campaign?
No, I'm suggesting you ask me if we were surveilling the campaign.
You don't get it both ways. Is it the campaign or not?
Senator, I'm trying to give you what is the accurate information here. Carter Page was a former member of the Trump campaign at the time that the FISA was initiated.
And what was the reason for the FISA on Carter Page?
There were a number of reasons. First, we had gotten the information that I was trying to point out here, that the Russians had made the overture that they wanted to be able to assist the Trump campaign.
Now, hold on, you said it had nothing to do with the Trump campaign.
I said that he was not a member of the Trump campaign at the time that we initiated the FISA.
So here's the interesting thing. First of all, Senator Ted Cruz is actually really smart to focus specifically on his verbiage saying the Trump campaign and getting her to deny that. She's saying, no, it wasn't on the Trump campaign. The FISA warrant was on Carter Page. And her defense of that was that the FISA warrant was when he was a former member of the Trump campaign. Now, there's a lot of stuff we can go into on this. The quickest thing that I'm going to get into is a FISA warrant is required, obviously, to conduct surveillance, but a FISA warrant is supposed to have all of this burden of evidence. And how would the government get evidence against Carter Page if he was a former member, or if they weren't investigating the campaign? He was a former member of the campaign by the time they got to the warrant, according to her. I'm not even sure if that's actually true. Might be. But What were they, then? Where did they get all the information? Who was investigating him before? But the weird part here is Democrats have consistently said that Russia influenced the election in 2016. They stole it. It was a coordinated effort between the Donald Trump campaign and the Russian government to steal the 2016 election from Queen Hillary. So why would Sally Yates want to distance herself from investigating the Trump campaign? Why is she being very specific in saying that they did not surveil the Trump campaign? Because everything that we've heard about the Russia investigation was that Donald Trump was an asset of Vladimir Putin. Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin stole the election from Hillary. Donald Trump was working with the Russians. So why the hell would Sally Yates suddenly shy away? Why is she nervous about there being a connection between the between their surveillance and the Trump campaign? That seems really odd and devoid of everything we've heard for 4 years now. So what gives on that? I mean, why is she making sure she's very afraid to say under oath that she was involved in surveillance of the Donald Trump campaign? I mean, we all know why, but here's another clip.
Of the phone call?
This was a counterintelligence investigation of the Trump campaign's potential relationship with the Russians.
That makes no sense. On January the 4th, they recommend to drop Flynn. They mentioned the Logan Act, and you advised against prosecuting the Logan Act. Is that true?
We never made an official decision about whether we were going to do it, but I think it was unlikely, certainly unlikely, that we would pursue a prosecution. That was not our primary concern.
Yes.
It was not a Logan Act violation. It was a counterintelligence concern.
Okay, here's what I want to understand. It's a counterintelligence investigation that led to the interview. You didn't authorize the interview. As a matter of fact, you wanted to go to the White House and tell them about the problem, didn't you?
That's right. I did. I thought that that was the more immediate issue.
And when you heard about the interview, you got upset, didn't you?
I was upset that Director Comey didn't coordinate that with us and acted unilaterally. Yes, I was.
Okay. Did Comey go rogue?
Then you could use that term, yes.
Finally.
So, once again, now they're discussing the Michael Flynn investigation. Yates directly blames James Comey. She makes sure to wash her hands entirely of anything to do with the prosecution of Michael Flynn. Once again, though, Democrats have stated that Michael Flynn was absolutely guilty. They say that Bill Barr is doing political favors for Donald Trump by dropping the prosecution of Michael Flynn, and that it's corruption of the highest order. If that's the case, why is Sally Yates so afraid of having any involvement with the prosecution of Michael Flynn? Why is she actually making sure that she says, no, it was counterintelligence, it was counterintelligence, it was counterintelligence? Why? It doesn't make any sense. Why is she afraid of having any involvement with this? Now, Senator Josh Hawley actually does a really good summary of exactly what's going on in this hearing. And then I'll give you my final thoughts of the pattern that I'm seeing throughout this entire hearing today.
Chairman, that I seem to detect a pattern here. Ms. Yates testifies she has no idea what her deputy is doing as he facilitates contact between a political party opposition research and the FBI. She has no idea that these applications that she signed materially misled a federal court, just as Rosenstein said he had no idea. Nobody appears to know anything in this government, and yet somehow a federal court was deliberately and systematically misled so severely that they now say they can't trust anything that the FBI did. If this doesn't call for a cleaning of house at DOJ and the FBI, I don't know what is. And I just know that Bruce Orr is still on the payroll at the Department of Justice. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coons.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We're on a 5-minute break. I apologize, Ms. Yates.
Chairman.
We'll take a break from Ms. Yates.
I see no reasons for those remarks. They're inflammatory. I think the witness ought to be able to respond if she chooses.
She certainly may. And let me just give my two cents worth. I don't think they're inflammatory at all. I think it's the truth. Bruce Orr is apparently going rogue. You got her deputy orchestrating interviews and meetings, and he tells the FBI in November, you need to watch Steele. What the hell's going on over there?
I don't think we're doing this. Since my remarks are the ones that were just challenged, Mr. Chairman, I'll just say with all due respect, we have a deliberate and systematic misleading of a federal court here. I don't think you can say anything more inflammatory than what the federal court itself said when they issued an incredible statement. I've never seen a federal court, let alone the FISA court issue, saying that they now had no confidence in any of the submissions of the FBI based on the level of lying.
Well, everybody's to blame and nobody's to blame. Exactly. Is the problem we have. We'll take a 5-minute break and we'll.
What's interesting, first of all, Senator Feinstein's response, the entire purpose of congressional hearings is that Congress performs oversight on these organizations. The Department of Justice falls under congressional oversight. So when you have evidence that the FBI lied to the FISA court, actually changed and edited documents specifically to push through a FISA application, left out evidence in the prosecution of Michael Flynn, it's the job of Congress to be inflammatory in the sense of asking what the hell's going on and how come the top people had no idea what the hell was happening. Sally Yates was the acting attorney general at the time a lot of this happened, and she didn't know anything that was occurring. She had no idea about what was happening in her own organization, in the Department of Justice, who also houses the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It is Congress's job, Senator Feinstein, but I'm glad that you're finally showing us that you've been so derelict in your duty that you literally don't even actually know what the hell you're supposed to do. The reality is the Democrats are nervous over that assertion. She doesn't like it at all. She doesn't like the assertion about them not claiming that they don't know what the hell is going on, because that was supposed to be their defense. I didn't know about it. I had no idea. I didn't touch it. And now you're saying, well, then I guess we should clean house at the DOJ. That's what upsets the Democrats. You can't do that. Don't clean house, because that would destroy the deep state. That's how they get all their leaks. That's how they set everything up. That's how they screw over the American people and push their policies anyway, especially in the second term of Trump. Now, my real point and the theme that I noticed throughout this hearing, Sally Yates wants to get as far away from any involvement in Obamagate. She's making sure that her under oath testimony, in her under oath testimony, that she didn't know anything. She didn't do anything. She never laid a hand on anything involving the investigations. In the investigation of Donald Trump's campaign, the prosecution of Michael Flynn, the FISA warrants, she didn't know anything about anything. And why would you need to do that if everything was by the book, as we're told by Susan Rice's weird memo on the Oval Office meeting regarding Michael Flynn? Everything was by the book. Everything is about, you know, national security. We're saving the world from Russia. So why the hell would you want to be as far away from it as possible? If you were truly pursuing a Russian threat against the United States, why would you be afraid of having your fingerprints on the investigation? What this shows is an unraveling of the entire charade. Sally Yates knows that someone is going to go down for the abuse of the intelligence community and the Department of Justice for political purposes. And she's making sure that it sure as hell isn't her. That's what people, that's what's happening here. You don't see people covering their ass like this unless they're certain that someone is going to fry. What it tells me is that these people do not have a coordinated message, and the Obama alumni, it's every man for themselves. That's what's happening here. It's going to be a bunch of finger pointing. I didn't know anything. I didn't do anything. I don't know. I don't recall. because they know that they're going to try to pin it on somebody. They know that they did something wrong. If the Democrat rhetoric that we have heard for 4 years had any shred of truth, even a shred of truth to it, these people would stand firm. They would say that they were defending the United States against Russians. They would say that they were looking into the campaign that was being infiltrated by Russian influence. They were looking into the idea that Donald Trump might have been flipped into a Russian asset. They would absolutely stand up and say we were doing the right thing. We were protecting the country. We were doing everything in our power. If there was any shred of truth to the Democrat accusations, they would stand up and say, yes, we looked into it. We looked at it. It looked wrong. It looked bad. We looked into it. We investigated it. And you would say, we couldn't find enough evidence, but we know something bad happened. If there was any shred of truth to anything the Democrats have said for 4 years, these people would stand up for it. Hell, they would have the entire media backing them up. They would have the entire Democrat Party backing them up. Why the hell wouldn't they? Why are they scared? Why are they hiding? Why are they pointing fingers? Because there isn't a shred of truth for them to stand up for. The media can't even save them. All of the propaganda that they have out there, all of the assets that they have to bullshit and spin the narrative, even they can't save them from what's coming from this investigation. That's why. They know that they're screwed. They're hoping to slow walk this, and they're hoping that Joe Biden wins, so they never have to touch it again. But just in case Joe Biden loses, they're making sure to cover their ass. That's what's happening here. That should make everybody happy. Anyone who wants to see justice done should be excited right now by watching how these people are freaking out. This is all a good thing for us. Now, our next story. The Libertarian Party seems to be getting woke. And it is really cringy. Libertarians are interesting people. I have friends that are libertarian, but there's many different colors of libertarianism, it would seem. Some of my friends are just people who want to be left alone, and I can completely understand that. And there's a lot of stuff about libertarianism that I can like. You know, there's certain things that I don't, but there's certain things that I do. For the most part, I just kind of think it's sort of weak, to be honest. That's my only real problem with it. But then you also get like the woke centrists, the people who just sit on the fence and just don't want to have a decision. And they just think that they're being cool nonconformists. But I don't support either major party because I'm so smart. That's the majority of libertarians. They're kind of the political equivalent of atheists. They just want to go against the grain and act like they're super smart for it. That's a lot of the libertarians I run into. But the point is that they've named their candidate for president, and her name is Dr. Jo Jorgensen. It's a real name. But Dr. Jo Jorgensen is trying really hard to let everyone know how woke she is. And I have a clip here from a C-SPAN interview that Jorgensen did where she's talking about systemic racism. She started off by talking about claiming that drug enforcement is racist. So we know that she believes in systemic racism, but let me play through this and I'll stop it throughout and kind of make my comments as we go.
A white person much less likely to get caught. But what a lot of people don't realize is that it's actually built into the system, in that if you look at drugs that people of color tend to use, those have longer prison sentences than the drugs that whites tend to use. So right into the system is built in. And I'd like to mention one thing that a lot of people don't realize, and this will give you an example of just how deep the problem is. We've all heard the story of Rosa Parks, about she was a heroic Black woman who refused to sit in the back of the bus. And what a lot of people don't realize is that that was a government-owned, government-run bus. And the only way that racism was able to go on for so long was the government was putting it into place. And you look, 60% of the bus ridership back then was Black. So look at today. Let's say Uber discriminated against 60% of their customers, the best 60% of the customers they had. They would go out of business, as well they should.
So here's my first question here is, this is a libertarian candidate, you know, the libertarian candidate. So let's keep it to the libertarian ideas. But by libertarian standards, shouldn't a private business be allowed to discriminate? If Uber decided that it didn't want to drive black people around, isn't that a free market decision that Uber is allowed to make? But Jorgensen says that it's wrong. She says that they should go out of business. They should go out of business for doing that. And if she were the president of the United States, would she defend Uber's decision to only offer its services to whomever it wishes? Or would she use government force to combat what she considers discrimination and considers wrongdoing? If Uber wanted to change their name and their policy and become, say, Ubermensch and only drive around the Aryan nation, is that not the right of a private business? What's the Libertarian Party position on that? Because as far as I know, they should be allowed to do whatever they want. So my question is for Dr. Jorgensen here is, if they decided that they didn't want to drive black people around, that is a free market decision that Uber, or maybe they change their name to Ubermensch, decide that they don't want to participate. They don't want those customers. They want to service whomever they wish. Shouldn't they be allowed to do that? And since she's saying that they should go out of business, she's suggesting that it's wrong that they do that. If she were president, if she were putting forward libertarian policies, would she use government force to cause Uber to have to change their policy or not? Because it sounds like she would, which seems to be the opposite of everything that I've ever been told about the Libertarian Party. But let's go on.
It doesn't go out of business. They can discriminate all they want, and they just keep raising taxes. So first of all, private companies cannot discriminate as easily and as get off as scot-free as the federal government. And we've seen that, we now see that today. There was a woman who, on her private Facebook, this was highly publicized, her private Facebook put "All Lives Matter." And the company fired her. And what I'd like to make note of, she wasn't talking to or wasn't treating a coworker, an employee, a customer, a client, anybody like that. And this was her private Facebook, not the company Facebook. And yet the company said, okay, we don't tolerate that. So again, I see a bigger backlash with private companies. And again, my example of Walt Disney World, how they treated gays better in the early 90s than the federal government did 20 years later. So there's a profit motive to treat people well. And
what's her position here? Is it okay for a business to fire somebody based on what they do in private? Her example is a company fired somebody for posting "All Lives Matter," with her insinuation, by the way, that that's somehow racist, which is stupid and insane on its own, but we don't have enough time. She suggests that she supports the idea of a company firing somebody for what they say in private. She literally doubled down on that. She mentions a lot that it was on her private Facebook. It was not, or on her private social media. It was not in the company. It wasn't to a coworker. It wasn't to anyone involved. And she doesn't condemn the company doing that. So she supports the idea of a company firing somebody for what they say in private. But then she talks about how Disney accepted gays earlier than the government. So which is it, Dr. Jorgensen? Should a company be allowed to fire or judge its employees on what they do in private or not? It seems like you're okay with employers judging their employees' private lives, but then you bring up how Disney treated gays. Would you support a company? Would you support that same company you just celebrated, the one you just bragged about, if they decided to fire an employee because they were gay? It's what the employee does in private. And if the company says that's not okay, would you support that decision? Is it an employer's right to judge their employee by their private lives and speech, or isn't it? What's the official stance of the Libertarian Party? Because she gives an example and celebrates a company for firing someone who put "All Lives Matter" on their personal Facebook. So if I'm a business owner and somebody on their personal Facebook admits that they're a homosexual and I don't like or agree with homosexuality, would I be able to fire that person? Or do the libertarians say you can't do that because they have every right to be gay? This is the same situation, but she's trying to play both sides. Now, I'm sure a lot of people are going to say, well, that's just what libertarians do. But you want to be the president of the United States, Dr. Jorgensen. You can't sit on the fence when you're running this country. So figure it out. Your woke bullshit only goes so far because you're playing both sides. But it looks like the official stance of the Libertarian Party is the government's systemically racist. All Lives Matter is racism, apparently. And companies should be allowed to fire people for what they post on their private Facebook, on their private social media, and fire people for not agreeing politically or with the woke statements of the left. And it looks like they support woke place policies. So that's the new Libertarian Party, ladies and gentlemen. It's just Democrat light, I guess. Interesting. And I thought that they were supposed to be the party of liberty, but I guess that only goes so far. Now, speaking of Democrats, Biden gave some interview So we make jokes all the time on this show about how Biden's constantly hidden his basement by his campaign because he's a public embarrassment. And I know a lot of people think that we're just being we're just being hyperbolic when we say that. The problem is that we're not. Biden gave an interview, and it was the best way that you can really define it was insanity. Joe Biden was a train wreck, and this is exactly why his campaign tries to hide him from the public as much as humanly possible. I've got a couple of clips here that we'll go through, but it is fascinating, to say the least. So here's clip one.
Have you taken a cognitive
test? No, I haven't taken a test. Why the hell would I take a test? Come on, man. That's like saying you, before you got in this program, if you take a test where you're taking cocaine or not, what do you think, huh? Are you a junkie?
What do you say to President Trump, who brags about his test and makes your mental state an issue for voters?
Well, if he can't figure out the difference between an elephant and a lion, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Did you watch that? Look, come on, man. I know you're trying to goad me, but I mean, I'm so forward looking to have an opportunity to sit with the president or stand with the president in debates. There's going to be plenty of time. And by the way, as I joke with him, you know, I shouldn't say it. I'm going to say something I probably shouldn't say. Anyway, I am very willing to let the American public judge my physical and mental fitness.
Not really a good look when the thing you stumble on is the word mental fitness. But okay. So, number one, didn't the Biden campaign brag about him taking a cognitive test? Didn't he say he takes one? And then they talked about how great he was? That was like a month ago. Now he said, no, I didn't take it, and basically says that he won't take one. And it's ridiculous to even ask him. Hilarious that he just basically suggests that a black man's on cocaine. But, you know, I mean, some people like to jump on that. I get his example, to be completely honest. It's just Democrats spent the last 4 years talking about Donald Trump's mental status. So welcome to the circus you created, Biden. Don't get so pissed off when it comes back around at you. Seriously, this is the culture you created. You can shove it up your ass if that upsets you, man. You guys did this. Now you're getting all butt blasted because people are asking about your cognitive decline, your physical health, suggesting you might have dementia. You literally did that for 4 years. Go to hell. Get over it. And the fact that you're so emotional and upset about it, that says something. Especially hilariously watching him snap like that. They always claim that Trump does that, and we never really see him actually get angry. You don't see Trump get upset. You don't see Trump get mad. That's Joe Biden mad. That's Joe Biden upset and butthurt. We never actually see that from Trump. Trump just says inflammatory things. This is an emotional reaction. But later in that interview, they decided to talk about China policy. And well, here's Joe Biden's thoughts on China policy. This is what Joe Biden's going to do about China.
The way China will respond is when we gather the rest of the world that in fact invades in free and in open trade and making sure that we're in a position that the world that we deal with WHO the right way. That in fact, that's when things begin to change. That's when China's behavior is going to change.
Anybody know what the hell he just said? Does anybody have any idea who the Democrat presidential candidate for the United States just said? What the hell just happened? No, he didn't just get woken up and asked a question. That's in the middle of an interview. He was awake. It's not like somebody rushed up and said, "What are you going to do about China?" And he's half asleep. It's like the best example is you ever have a little kid tell you a story and they're all over the place. That's what just happened. I mean, look, that's not good. I don't know a better way to say it. That's not good. This is elder abuse. This guy doesn't know what the hell is going on. And there's something wrong with Joe Biden. And the Democrats' way to deal with that is to hide it from the public. I just want you to know that. Just think about that for a second. The Democrats' response to this is to hide it from the American public, to keep him hidden in the basement and not let anybody see this. I mean, they want to always act like people that they're the party of transparency, but this guy's falling apart and they're going to hide him in the basement, only have him do scripted softball interviews, which he still messes up, and then act like they're being honest with the American people. They just want to win and they don't care about this country. They don't care about whether or not it's a good idea. It's just about winning. And they're dragging this poor old man along with them because he's a good puppet. Honestly, it's obscene. And a lot of people are noticing. Even Joe Rogan's calling it out. And Joe Rogan kind of disappointed everybody because he totally agrees with everything Trump says, but then went for Hillary because it was popular. But this doesn't look good for the Democrats. Every time, man. It's a good thing he didn't have a "you ain't black" moment. He almost did. Because if he did, we'd have more Black Lives Matter riots just to cover it up again. All right, our final story is... You remember the McCloskeys in Missouri, people that were defending their home against the BLM rioters? Well, the local NBC station out there was doing an investigation into the prosecution of the McCloskeys, and they came across some pretty interesting stuff. Now, the prosecutor in St. Louis is a Soros-funded liberal Democrat named Kim Gardner, and she has just been going to town trying to make an example of the McCloskeys. But this investigation from the local NBC news station is some pretty good journalism, and they found some pretty horrifying stuff that's going to make for a very interesting court case. It looks like a lot of political influence, but I'll let the investigation speak for itself, and I'll give you my comments after.
I'm on your side is learning more about the police investigation that led to charges against Mark and Patricia McCloskey. That's the couple that made national headlines after they confronted protesters with guns in front of their Central West End home. Our Christine Byers brings us exclusive new details about tension between police and prosecutors.
Five on Your Side obtained documents showing Assistant Circuit Attorney Chris Hinckley emailed the investigating officer's commander the day before the McCloskeys were served with a search warrant. The email stated in part, "Our office is receiving inquiries from the public and press about a warrant application and potential charges. We've thus far said the matter remains under investigation. I'd really like to avoid pointing to a police follow-up request as the holdup, but I won't control the messaging if this goes on any longer." The documents also show there were at least two versions of the probable cause statement outlining allegations against the McCloskeys. The original version, written by Hinckley, contained phrases like "organized" and "peaceful," and calling attention to racial inequities in the criminal justice system. Sergeant Curtis Bergdorf refused to sign the document and outlined 14 concerns he had with Hinckley's words, including how the evidence he gathered showed the protest was to call for the resignation of Mayor Lyda Crewson. Hinckley sent Sergeant Bergdorf an email stating in part that at least one of his concerns showed purposeful ignorance. He also left him a voicemail.
Curtis, you need to call me back. I wrote a long email to you trying to ask you a bunch of questions about whatever it is you said. Now we need to straighten this out because I'm about done with this crap. Call me back.
Meanwhile, the McCloskeys told police, Five on Your Side, and other media outlets that the protesters they confronted were armed and wearing bullet-resistant vests. Protest leaders told Five on Your Side they were not armed. Ultimately, the McCloskeys were charged with unlawful use of a weapon. But the investigation, including the police review of videos, has continued. In follow-up reports, the investigating officer wrote at least one person was armed in the crowd, and at least one other was wearing a bullet-resistant vest with a patch that read, Human Shield. Some of the statements Bergdorf could decipher from videos included phrases like, You own a business. Your business is gone. We coming back, baby. You ain't the only expletive with a gun. They're coming back to your house. A spokeswoman for Kim Gardner's office told Five on Your Side she could not comment on a pending case. Christine Byers, Five on Your Side.
So what we have here is it looks like the prosecutors are 100% lying. They didn't want to talk about any of the evidence. It wasn't about the evidence. It was get that search warrant out there. Here, I'm going to write up this request, this affidavit, and it says that the protesters were organized and peaceful and everything was great. And the police are saying that's not what our investigation is finding. And you heard the voicemail where he's like, I'm done with the bullshit. I'm done with this crap. Get it done. And then threatens his supervisor, the supervisor of the investigating officer, where he basically says, look, if you hold this up any longer, I'm going to throw it all in your lap. It's going to be your problem. This is a politically motivated investigation where it looks like, obviously, Kim Gardner and this other prosecutor 100% already had their idea figured out. It wasn't about justice at all. It's all about politics. Make the McCloskeys look bad because the idea of standing against the liberal mob, the Democrat mob, the mob that has been put there by the Democrat Party, and he's standing against them. We need to use the McCloskeys as an example of what happens when you get in the way of the Democrat Party. You'll be thrown in jail. You're not allowed to protect yourself against Democrats. That's a crime. And as we can see, looks like everything the McCloskeys said was true. They deciphered part of the video where they were absolutely being threatened, which gives them a really good reason to go grab a gun when people are saying they're coming for you. So, I mean, as frustrating as this is, and like I've said on the program before, this is a good thing. The further that this goes, it means that legally, the courts will have to decide whether or not you have a constitutional right to defend your home against an angry mob of Democrats, whether the Constitution gives you the right to defend yourself against a mob of angry Democrats. And I like that, because the Constitution's on our side with that. And the courts have already done plenty of ruling to fall back on that says, yes, you can 100% defend yourself against an angry mob of Democrats. Maybe we have to have it that explicitly written into law that it's not okay for an angry mob to threaten you on your front lawn. I'm also upset that we've gotten this far, but maybe we can help fix it before people have to literally battle over it. If you like this analysis, be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/wrongthinkradio so you can catch our live program, which we stream every single Sunday from noon until 2 Eastern, where myself and co-host Alan Reese go through the news of the week with our analysis. You can also check out wrongthinkradio.com to see any of the news stories we're following for the day. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And if you want to support the program, it's just $2.99 a month and you get a subscriber-only podcast once a week. That's over at subscribestar.com/wrongthinkradio. I'm Aaron Bierlein, and I'm keeping an eye on the left.